Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach, always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting email this week. He says, thank you for taking my email in question. My girlfriend and I listen to you on the radio, and she respects your opinion as I do. So here's the question. I've been separated for 9 months. I'm working on a divorce. Is it okay to date? I believe it is. But she's not comfortable with being around people who know my divorce is not final. Can you help? He kind of answered it when he said, if she's not comfortable, it's not a good gig. And Pat, you have some questions about dating?
I am 58 years old, and I've been divorced for years. I was watching the Oprah show the other day, and they were talking about...
They were talking about sexual desire.
How does that factor in if you're after menopause?
Obviously, being postmenopausal, you know, you aren't going to have the same pheromones, but then the men you're probably going to be dating, they're not going to have that need to mate with you, you know, for children. How do you feel?
How do you feel when you know that your sexuality is changing because developmentally life is different? And you've had trauma in your life. You've been with a partner who perhaps has betrayed you. You don't know what to think, feel, or do. And you certainly are having difficulty with the boundaries. Well, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, a.k.a. Carol the Coach. And we're here to talk about boundaries tonight. You know, I just got an email from a woman who said, my husband and I are trying to recover from his sexual addiction, and he has had 18 months of sobriety, recovery, and he has done everything right, but I'm still having trouble trusting him and wanting to reach out to him sexually because of his past. I can't help but stop and think of the things that have hurt me so badly. And it is really affecting our sexual health. What do I do? Well, that's the kind of question that, you know, we can give you some opinions and some books and some guidelines. If you were with me last week, you know that we had on the show Drs. Bill and Ginger Burkaw, who did A Couple's Guide to Intimacy, How Sexual Reintegration Therapy Can Help Your Relationship Heal. And that was a wonderful show. It talked about different exercises you can utilize, not just to build up a sexual relationship in terms of techniques and mechanics, but how do you rebuild that trust? Well, tonight we have a specialist. and her name is Dr. Barbara Steffens. She's the president of a group of treatment professionals and industry leaders in the field, all dedicated to treating the trauma experienced by partners of sex addicts. Now, we've been doing a lot of focusing on partners of sex addicts because you've heard me say before, in some ways, they are in more pain and trauma than the actual sex addicts. I mean, this isn't a competition, so I'm not saying that sex addicts don't have their own host of problems and areas of pain, but partners of sex addicts oftentimes don't know where to focus because they're feeling so much trauma, uncertainty, and confusion. And yet they're also focused on their partner who seems to be getting some of his or her needs met through 12-step programs and through a sponsor and maybe a certified sexual addictions therapist. Well, Dr. Barbara Steffens with Marsha Means co-wrote this book called Your Sexually Addicted Spouse, How Partners Can Cope and Heal. And the book has helped. It's changed millions of partners' lives. And she specifically talks about the fact that, you know, even the label of being co-addicted can be very, very tough for a partner to hear. Let's face it, if you're a partner of a sex addict, you probably are misunderstood. You are actually the survivor of a relational trauma and a sexual addicted-induced trauma. And so Dr. Barbara has made it her mission to educate and orient people, clinicians, so that they can actually go out and work with the partner and do the partner justice. And so she has this organization called APSATS. APSATS is the first and only organization that specializes in the preparation and certification of partner specialists. And it provides training and certification of certified clinical partner specialists and certified partner coaches. And these people are trained in the developing treatment model that acknowledges and responds to the traumatic stress found in partners affected by sex addiction. So if you're listening to the show, if you're a clinician, you'll want to listen further to see what this certification is all about. If you're a sex addict, you'll want to find out what is your partner dealing with. You know, so much of the work that I do with sex addicts has to do with developing empathy. And when I say developing empathy, I mean that as an addict, you have spent so much time being self-absorbed. And maybe even, and this is not meant to be negative, but maybe even selfish in terms of your own addiction. You know what I'm talking about. You looked for and stole opportunities to follow through with your addiction. You disengaged and disconnected from your family, from your partner, from your kids. And unfortunately, the partner knew something was wrong, may not have known what, or maybe she slowly or he slowly discovered what was going on by looking at your history on the computer or finding receipts from things that she had not participated in, hotel rooms, gifts, dinners, lunches, that kind of thing. So she knew or he knew what was going on, but didn't know how to address it, how to stop it. Well, let's face it, the partner can't stop it. What a partner of a sex addict needs to do is create his or her own boundaries, his or her own bottom line behaviors. And, you know, I was talking with a group member today, and he said that his partner had read in one of his books that he had not actually answered anything in the book, but he had underlined something that said, sexual addicts that are women are very different from sexual addicts that are men. And that sexual addicts that are women are seen as being relationally based, whereas sexual addicts that are men are just considered testosterone-laden. And this triggered his wife because this man had been with a female sexual addict. And so when he underlined that statement, because he said, this was really fascinating to me, she assumed that he had underlined the statement because he was thinking of his ex-partner. And the group did a fabulous job of confronting him and saying, you know what, we know that you're saying that you absolutely were not thinking about your affair. But most of them were able to say, hey, either A, if it were me, I'd be thinking of my affair, or B, what we notice about you is you're smiling, you're justifying, you're rationalizing, and you're not empathizing with your wife, who obviously felt triggered by you underlining that. And, you know, underlining a sentence for most people is no big deal, but that's the kind of trauma that a partner can feel if all of a sudden it seems like, oh my gosh, he's thinking about her again. And this is a man who has really good recovery. When I told him, I want you to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, he did it. And he started feeling the confidence of, hey, this is exactly what I need to stay recovered. And, you know, he's been working really, really hard. But this addiction means that people go in and out of denial. And the group wondered if maybe he wasn't in denial. You know, he doesn't want to necessarily be thinking about her. And so it's easy to say, I wasn't thinking about her, when in actuality he might have been thinking about her. Does that make sense? Well, listen, if you have a question for me, I would love for you to give me a call at 646-595-3284. As a matter of fact, I want you to put that in your phone so that when you listen to me every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can just key in Carol, the coach, and it will come up 646-595-3284, and you can ask me anything you need to anonymously. And or you can always email me at carolthecoach@aol.com. I'll be more than happy to talk with you about your issues and answer your questions. If you want to be super anonymous, just send me an email. And every week that I get an email, I always answer it the following show. So if you send me an email tomorrow, well, you won't hear about it next Monday because that is Memorial Day and we're going to be doing a replay of a very popular show. But you'll hear about it the following week. You'll hear what my response is to that email. And oftentimes I email you back and share my information ahead of time too. And if you want to get more information on sexual addiction or on partners of sexual addiction, you can go to iTunes, search sexual addiction, and look for Hope, Strength, and Recovery, Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And on that, under podcasts, and when you do that, you're going to be able to download, gosh, I think it's almost 60 shows that we've done where I've interviewed the experts, people that absolutely know exactly what they need to do to help someone who is in some way touched by this addiction. Unfortunately, this is an addiction that's very, very shame-based. All addiction is, if you've got a drug addiction, an alcohol addiction, if you overeat, overspend, if you gamble, or, as I indicated, if you have sexual compulsivity, you feel very, very shamed, and you may not know the right places to go. Who really has the expertise in this? You know, I was working with an addict who was very compulsively looking at porn. And he and his wife went to a counselor. And I'm sure this was a well-meaning counselor. But they were told to just relax and enjoy pornography. This person had no expertise in how do you assess for sexual addiction, what is compulsive, how has it destroyed one's life. And so this counselor was giving misinformation. And so that's why it's so important to get certified. And you can go to sexhelp.com, key in your own zip code, and find out who is the closest certified sexual addictions therapist available to you. Now, this is a new and upcoming field, so I tell you, that's why I'm really excited tonight to be interviewing Dr. Barbara Steffens, because more and more training and certification is occurring in specialty niches, and she has really made it her mission to educate and help clinicians who are working with partners who love sex addicts. So, Dr. Barbara Steffens, welcome to the Sex Help with Carol the Coach show. How are you tonight?
I'm great. So,
fantastic. Boy, you have really been working hard. I always say that we are all somewhat pioneers in this field because it is relatively new. And you have made it your mission to help sexual addicts and their partners, especially the partners and clinicians who are working with those partners. Tell me a little bit about what made you decide to go this route in the field of sexual addiction.
Gosh, I guess probably the most thorough and honest answer is that looking at the field of sex addiction or even partners of sex addicts was never anywhere on my radar screen when it came to my work as a clinician. I was a therapist, happily tooling along, doing general mental health and crisis intervention and working with women. And there was a crisis in my life. And out of that, trying to figure out what in the world just happened with some sexually compulsive behavior in my marriage, and then trying to find resources for myself, I found that at that time, which was about 16, 17 years ago, there was very little. And what was there didn't seem to describe my... And so that led me on a path that... What I tell people is my first foray into helping partners is when I asked a friend of mine who was running groups for men, where's your group for partners? And he said, Barbara, when are you going to start it? So that's how it happened. And the ones I started, just slowly over several years, it became more and more of my day-to-day focus. To do some research on partners that then led into a dissertation and then a journal article and then a book for partners, your sexually addicted spouse. So it's been quite the journey.
Well, absolutely, and I was talking earlier about that book and the fact that it really is a staple in today's field. And again, that book is called Your Sexually Addicted Spouse, How Partners Can Cope and Heal. So you figured out through your work and your own personal journey what were some things that a partner could do to heal his or her own self. And primarily, you started out by working with females. Is that correct?
Correct. And I still predominantly work with females, not because that's necessarily, a restriction on my part, but... We just find, at least for me, I just don't get very many male partners looking for assistance. But when I do, I see real similarities.
Absolutely. And again, out there in the field, there are certainly some 12-step groups that are available to partners, like COSA. But my experience is for every one COSA group, there's, well, for every 30 SA or SAA groups, there's only one COSA group. So it's just not as available, at least not here in the Midwest.
No, it's not. I'm in the greater Cincinnati area, and we have one that seems to be functioning very well. And but, yeah, they're very, very difficult to find. And there are more and more support groups being offered for partners that it may not be 12-step oriented that are coming out of therapist offices, faith-based organizations, who are really starting to see the need and wanting to find ways to help meet that. Resources for the person with the addiction may be a little difficult to find, but for partners, they struggle trying to find adequate resources for themselves, whether that be in the community or sometimes even in the therapist office.
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously you shared that you had your own personal journey with some sexual compulsion in your own family. But then I'm wondering, what kind of training did you get in sexual addiction, and especially with the partner?
Well, right. Most of my training, again, this was 16, 17 years ago, was in the field. I received some training from Dr. Mark Laser back then, and then was grandfathered in terms of being a certified sex addiction specialist through a faith-based credentialing organization. But working with partners, it really, because when I was getting training, there was nothing. So I relied on my solid mental health training, my and education, and then my clinical experience. As I was starting to listen to the stories of the partners, I heard them describe life experiences that sounded so familiar to, I'll say women because that's who I was seeing, who had been through traumatic life-altering events such as sexual assault, abuse in their relationships, natural disasters even. And they were describing what it was like when they found out about their partner's sexual behaviors. They described a trauma response. And as we would go through symptom after symptom, my mental health training said this is clearly very, very close, if not post-traumatic. So that really helped start to formulate my view in what now we call a trauma model approach for working with partners, really hearing that trauma related to and in response to the impact of sex addiction on the partner's life. And I think that's what's made the biggest difference in terms of the field for partners and from partners that I hear from. They resonate, describe their experience. They feel validated. They feel heard when someone hears the trauma of what they've experienced.
Well, now let me ask you, because you talked about trauma responses, and obviously for some of our listeners, we have clinicians on the line, we have listeners that are addicts and their partners. What are some of those very common trauma responses?
Well, I think the first one that we think of a lot with partners in particular is that heightened anxiety or even hypervigilance. That's that being on guard, just waiting and watching for the next potential threat. I was just talking to some folks this past week, and we used the Boston bombing as an example. You know, people that were anywhere close to that for a period of time, any time they hear a loud noise, a backfire of a car, they're going to be startled into an alert state or be very vigilant for their safety. And we find that with partners as well. All they have to do is maybe have their spouse come in an irritable mood that now they associate with when they were acting out. And so that irritable mood can cause some hypervigilance and caution. What's going to happen? Am I safe right now? So that, that hypervigilance, watching the environment, looking for threats out of a desire to stay safe or to know if danger is coming. So that's probably, that's the one when you think of a partner checking, maybe checking on a computer and a wallet, walking into a public place and scanning the environment for potential threats. That's what trauma survivors do. They look for where is the danger. We also
well, that
see re-experiencing.
Yeah, and that heightened anxiety can look like heart palpitations, sweatiness, inability to sleep, checking and rechecking and rechecking. And even sometimes some of the same parallels with the addict. You know, oftentimes the addict says, okay, this is the last time I'm going to look at porn, and then they find themselves compulsively looking at it again, even though they promised themselves they wouldn't. And the same thing is true with partners. They say, I am not going to check his phone anymore. I'm not going to go to the internet and look at his history. And yet they find themselves doing it after they promised themselves that they wouldn't.
Right. And after they recognize that it's not really getting them what they want, and what they want is a sense of restored safety. They they want a return of feeling secure in their environment. And so that's why the behaviors. So what we do is we talk about, okay, if that one's not working, what can you do? What are the things that you have control over to help yourself start to feel safe again? And that's where we talk about boundaries and being able to say no, or really digging into feeling strong and empowered themselves, leaning on strong, healthy relationships. So just really shifting that focus from trying to feel safe around the addict's behavior, which, you know, they don't feel safe themselves, so how can they help their wives feel safe or their spouse feel safe? So they go to other places. The other thing that we see is avoidance with trauma and with partners of sex addicts. The avoidance that I tend to see are avoiding reminders, so not wanting to go to places that remind them of either the discovery crisis or certain acting out that they're now aware of. So that could be places. That can be places in the house. I've known of people that got whole new bedroom furniture as a way of, you know, they had to avoid their bedroom. So by refurnishing it, it now became a safe place again, or a place that wasn't tainted with those memories. And sometimes the avoidance is just not wanting to talk about it. And it's hard, difficult to get those partners into treatment. When that's how
well, you're absolutely right, and I would say more often than not, many partners do kind of bargain with the addict to try to change the environment to make it safer, and can spend thousands of dollars that they don't have, because at that point, the addict oftentimes wants to do whatever he or she can do to make it feel safe, and yet then they find themselves in lots of financial debt because they got new flooring, they repainted the walls, they got the new furniture.
Right.
Because unfortunately, so many addicts do bring home people that they were seeing, and that's part of the risk. It's not like they really wanted to share that sacred spot, but they wanted to up the ante and increase the risk.
Right.
Yes. So truly, you know, you have helped many people. Now, when you run your groups, what can people expect to do in a group?
Well, I run currently. I run coaching groups because I'm also a board certified coach, and so I do some telephone groups. And what in my groups, what they can expect is support, information, empowerment, safety in the group in terms of, you know, confidences, being hold things private and confidential, and then focus on themselves. What do they need? Kind of getting back in touch with themselves. I hear a lot of partners say, after recovery a while, and they've really kind of gotten past the shock and crisis stage, and they feel like they've lost touch with who they are. So I find that partner coaching is really helpful to get them back in touch with who they are, what they want for themselves, their values. And so they're making decisions based on those things rather than out of fear. And I find that to be really empowering. I've also done some face-to-face groups, which are more process-oriented, talk about what's going on and focus on their experiences, their emotions, and help them find ways of calming and finding safety in themselves.
Well, I like the fact, because I am actually a personal life coach as well as a licensed certified sexual addictions therapist and mental health therapist. But, you know, coaching in some ways takes away some of the stigma of thinking that there's something wrong with you. So I like the fact that you spend time coaching the partners so that they can actually feel better about some of the decisions they're making, because it is very difficult for them to know what is my own insecurity versus what is my own gut telling me about my own boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really getting back in touch with their gut. A lot of partners have learned to distrust their gut over the years, because while the addiction was active in their behavior, many times the partner will have this gut instinct, something's wrong, they'll go to check it out, and they get reasonable responses or explanations for, you know, why they might be experiencing what they are. So they then tend to not trust their perception. So in coaching, we really try to help them just get back in touch with the strengths that they have and the wisdom and knowledge that they have about themselves, and then to learn to listen to that and act on that again in healthy, respectful, appropriate ways in their relationships. Boy, when you get these women together, and again, I'm saying women because that's who I have in my groups, it is powerful the way they care for, encourage, and empower one another. It's a lifeline, I think, for a lot of the ladies.
You know, obviously your book gives a lot of helpful advice in terms of those boundaries and self-care and trusting not only your head and your heart, but also your gut. And that book was written in 2009?
Correct.
So that is the Your Sexually Addicted Spouse, How Partners Can Cope and Heal. And you co-authored that. And out of that, Marcia Means, and out of that came your desire to start. Now, do you say it APSETS or is it APS? APS.
Tell
us about that. Yeah.
Sure. It's a new organization, nonprofit corporation that was founded, early fall 2012. And over the years, I had been getting to know and networking with other clinicians across the country who are really working with partners from a trauma model perspective. And as we began to talk and network, we really heard that there is an incredible need to help train clinicians on how to help the partner. I get emails every day, as you can imagine, people wanting to know, where do I get help in my community, especially from a trauma perspective for the partner. And really clear that even people trained in sex addiction treatment, such as yourselves, other clinicians, get some training in helping the partner, but sometimes just not adequate or not quite enough experience. So we thought it was time to really establish a specialty for those working with partners of sex addicts. So this group of clinicians joined together. We have a nice, solid board of seasoned clinicians. Finished developing our curriculum, and we're ready to do our first training for therapists and life coaches. First one is going to be in Dallas the end of June, and it has already sold out. And the second one will be in October. So the need is incredible, and the interest is overwhelming. We're just so gratified that people want to come and network with other clinicians that are helping partners, and then learn more and grow in their practice.
Okay, and so this training for clinicians that are listening to the show tonight, this training is about, is it $50?
I think it's $850 early bird. Yeah, it's four full days of training. We should be able to have CEUs with that. And then after that, depending on their level of experience working with partners, we'll have a period of time where they have what we call case supervision, but it's really consultation. You're working with your peers who have years of experience working with partners from a trauma perspective. And then out of that, they can apply for certification. So we're really excited for this group, first group of people that will be certified partner specialists. It's
a dream
come true to me. I just can't even imagine.
Well, no kidding. And how will our listeners who want to work with those people, how will they be able to find them?
How will they be able to find those trained clinicians?
Once they go through
the training, their names and information, contact information, will be on the APSAS website, which is partnertraumaspecialist.org.
Okay.
And we'll have a directory. Right now, the directory is made up of our board members, and there's 10 of us. So we are so excited that we're going to have that expand very, very quickly. So that's how the primary way they'll be able to find that out. And then certainly therapists will be able to market themselves as certified partner specialists.
And then those trainings, they actually, hopefully, will occur quarterly. Is that not correct?
Yes, that's our goal. So for this year, we'll conduct two since this is our first year. So we have the Dallas training, and then in October it will be in my hometown, which is Cincinnati, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the winter we are planning in L.A. On the West Coast, probably January or early February. And then we're looking at a spring date, possibly Salt Lake, or possibly on the East Coast. We haven't firmed those up yet.
Okay, so you're really trying to intersperse them so that everybody has an opportunity, may not have to travel as far and make that happen.
Right. And we learned through the June one in Dallas that we're holding the group that we're training to just about 30 therapists. So that, and clinicians or coaches, so that we can get to know them, they can get to know us, we can have good exchange. They are selling out quite quickly. So we'll have to move around the country a few times. So hopefully people will learn about it early enough that they'll be able to get registered and be able to go closest to their home.
Oh, that's fantastic. And so, again, these people will probably be considered the top trained specialist in working with partners. I mean, there's no other model like this, right, in terms of certification?
No, there is no other organization that is providing training specific for working with the partner. So we'll be talking about the trauma model, what does that mean, how does it impact the partner, how does it impact and assist in treatment of the person with the sex addiction, understanding the trauma piece for the partner. And then also understanding and starting to work with how that trauma within the partner and within the person with the addiction then plays itself out in the coupleship. And so how we can also help the couple when they're experiencing this trauma after that crisis of discovery. So we're really excited about being able to not only help the partner, which is our goal, but how that is going to help the whole system.
Well, my hat is off to you and the other board members who are putting this together, and this will then be the first year that you will have certified, trained APSATs, APSATs.
Yes.
Yeah, which, of course, again, is the Association of Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists. And so, you know, what I know to be true, being a CSAT, is that when you have this kind of certification, three things happen. One is that you literally get exercises and assessments and tools that actually help you focus a lot quicker on what the issues are.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, you know, being part of an organization, you're with the cream of the crop in terms of people that are really motivated to continue to provide services and develop protocol that will help partners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so that is so important. And the more often that you do that, then I assume that when you get communities of people that have been helped by these specialists, they are actually stronger and healthier and can pay that forward.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And part of the process I'm looking forward to the most is as we're doing our training, we will be learning from clinicians who have been doing this work. So we really see this as a dynamic process where we are really going to strengthen the field by our own training that we're going to be providing, but by the things that develop out of our trainings, the learnings that we have from one another. So, yes, we'll offer assessment tools or treatment tools, but then as we hear more and get research from the field on how things are going and what is working, this whole area of partner treatment is going to expand and grow and become richer and much more effective. So I see us as starting the process, but in 5 years, 10 years, I think we're going to be so much wiser and have so much richer experience in helping the partner and the relationship.
Well, it sounds like more material for another book.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It really does, yeah. We'll be busy, that's for sure. And I'm plenty busy. I say I'm kind of I'm in a grandmother mode right now. I'm a grandmother. I have a 2.5-year-old, almost 3-year-old grandson. And it's really gotten me in touch with that process of grandparenting. So when I think about this APSATS organization and partner trauma, you know, I think of, okay, I'm kind of like the first generation, a partner specialist, where that's really where I'm zeroed in. And now there's this other level of clinicians who have kind of responded to what we started to talk about when we published Your Sexually Addicted Spouse. And that's kind of the second generation. And now this third generation I'm going to see as my grandkids, who are going to take this stuff and as they help partners and people with sex addiction and the couple and advocate in the community around this issue. So much more education in the community.
Well, and I love the fact that you do this around trauma, because truly my experience is that almost every partner I have ever worked with does experience the sexual addiction as a trauma. I mean, it really does affect them bodily, psychologically, spiritually, emotionally. Yeah. And so when it's trauma-based, then you're recognizing the seriousness and the scope of the problem, and that nobody should feel bad about describing their symptoms. How do you get your referrals?
How do I get my referrals? Mostly through word of mouth, and because they have stumbled upon or been encouraged to read Your Sexually Addicted Spouse. In my community, my caseload is word of mouth, but I get emails and calls from everywhere across the United States and from other countries now. So for those, I can't do the clinical work with them, but I may provide some consultation, or for some, we can do some coaching depending on where they're at. But I've developed relationships with clinicians in my town and have good reputation. So I'm as busy as I want to be.
I hear that. Now, for people out there that are listening, and obviously they're thinking, gosh, I would love to utilize somebody who's specialized in this field. Knowing that these people are now just being certified, what bit of advice would you give someone who feels traumatized by their partner and is just now beginning therapy?
I would encourage them to take the risk of speaking that to their therapist, if they find a therapist, a CSAT, or someone through another credentialing program, if they understand the dynamics of sex addiction. I think that's best. And then they can speak that, maybe help out trauma. I hate to think that consumers have to take on the responsibility of educating therapists, but sometimes, you know, consumers have to do that. And then advocate for what they need. Sometimes in some communities it's very difficult to find someone that truly understands sex addiction. And so then with partners and trauma symptoms, I encourage them to locate someone who understands trauma, relational trauma, and those people can help them with some of their trauma symptoms. And then maybe consult with or do coaching with someone that understands the sex addiction piece. For a lot of partners, it's kind of a hybrid deal. They have to piece together what they need. But taking on that role of taking responsibility for their own care, I think, is empowering. So I always encourage women to just keep working at finding what they need. Very, very hard to find. And for some of the people I have talked to, they have several misses before they finally have a hit in terms of a therapist that they feel comfortable working with. So don't
Well, I know.
Up.
I was just sitting here thinking, okay, so I'm a person who is just beside myself with emotion, and and my partner, I've just discovered the whole thing, and I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And you said, find somebody who's good with trauma. So how would I go about doing that, since I'm just the average housewife or executive or, you know, bank teller who has a family to raise?
Right. A lot of times, word of mouth, if you have friends, family who have been through any kind of therapy before, they may be people to try. You can go online and check through different online resources where you can find therapists and their specialty. For trauma, sometimes I suggest, especially for female partners, to check out who are the clinicians in their community that help when there's domestic violence, because those clinicians understand at least relational trauma and might be of some assistance. But going to reputable sites where therapists are listed with their specialties can be really helpful. Going to my website, safepassages.com, is a place where I have a list of some therapists that I'm aware of. But people email me all the time, and I will work with them to try to help them make a connection. I know a lot of partner coaches will do the same. I've seen on your website you have a lot of resources. So it's really just taking the risk to take a step out there and start to look, but with caution, because if you're looking on the Internet, you can find all sorts of things. If it doesn't quite feel right, move on and keep looking for something that meets your need. But sometimes you really need an advocate, and that's where a coach or a consultant can really be of assistance.
Well, and you've been, you know, even in your book, you talk about the fact that unfortunately there are some clinicians who actually do more harm than good because they don't understand about trauma or sexual addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And so they actually cause further trauma to the client. So one more time, list your website so that I can put it on my website as well as give that to others if anybody sends me an email or gives me a call.
Okay. Well, the website for my private practice is www.safepassagescounseling.com. And passages with an S. And on there, under resources, you can find links to good online resources as well as clinicians.
Got it. And then
then the app, that website is partnertraumaspecialists.org.
Okay, partnertraumaspecialists.org.
Correct.
And then last but not least, if people are interested in getting your book, because it was one of the first in the field, and again, that is called Your Sexually Addicted Spouse, How Partners Can Cope and Heal by Barbara Steffens. And her name is Means. Her first name is?
Marcia Means.
Marcia Means. So how might they pick up your book?
Probably the easiest way is to go to any online bookseller. I find people cannot find it in their normal brick-and-mortar bookstore. It's very hard to find there, but Amazon, Barnes & Noble have those both in traditional book form but also ebook. If they want to purchase it through me, through the Safe Passages Counseling website, they can do that as well. I don't carry a big stock, so Amazon works very well. They get it very, very quickly. And Amazon or Barnes & Noble can do the e-book format, which for a lot of partners has really helped them go ahead and purchase the book. The title itself, for some, they just don't want to carry that book around. So an e-book format feels a little safer.
Well, you know, I always tell my clients that I don't want to treat them in a vacuum. I want to help them to develop resources and a community and the best specialists available so that they're not all by themselves. And I know that you have a quote that says, "Sexual addiction-induced trauma recognizes that sex addiction does not occur in a vacuum and often impacts not only the partner, the addict, the couple, children, family system, community, and society at large." And so really, you know, the fact that you are training people specifically to work with this trauma-based group is a real gift and a service to them. And I just can't thank you enough for taking your own personal journey and doing what the 12-step program says. It's servicing others. And you've really spent a lot of your time putting this whole thing together. So I so appreciate that. I certainly hope that the clinicians listening will consider going to a training. Like you said, June of 2013 in Dallas is sold out, but you hope to have another training in Cincinnati and then LA.
We've already started to accept registrations for the Cincinnati training.
Fantastic. Dr. Stephens, thank you so much for your work and for the book, and I can't wait to get the next book. Just keep up the great work.
Oh, thank you very much, and thanks for letting me talk about this. Obviously, it's a passion, and we're just so excited at what's going to be coming next. So thank you again very, very much.
All right. You have a great night.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, as you can see, it's a woman who has a passion, and this is the beautiful thing. You know, I was talking to a man tonight, and he's a voyeur, and he's in jail. Well, he's not in jail. He's in work release, and, you know, he was basically saying, this is the worst thing that could have ever happened to me, not because I didn't deserve to pay a consequence, but because I'm wasting my time. The system does nothing to rehabilitate. I'm with a bunch of 20 and 30-year-olds in a work release center, and they don't seem to know their rear end from a hole in the ground, if you will. And so we spent a lot of time talking about the fact that whenever there's an issue and you feel unempowered, you have to say to yourself, what can I do to empower myself? And I reminded this 30-something-year-old man that, yes, he's one of the oldest in this work release center, but he can be the role model that these younger men need to get their lives together. And he said, well, I don't know that many of them have sexual addictions. I mean, they're drug and alcohol addicts, and they're in there for burglary. And I said, you know what? You are a role model. So for anybody out there listening tonight, I just want you to know that it matters not what your issues or problems are. It matters not whether you're a partner of a sex addict or you're the sex addict him or herself. You have the ability to influence people in a healthy way. Once you get involved in recovery and work through your trauma and sometimes your trauma reenactment, you know, one of the things we know about partners and addicts together is that they get magnetized to people that create more trauma in their lives, and then they reenact the same trauma they experienced in their teens, in their school-age years, and even in their you know, very young age group. And so when you've got that trauma, it's important to work it out and then be that role model to help to change not only your life, but your family's life and the community at large. And Barbara took a bad situation, and she's making a difference for not only herself, but in her family, in her community, amongst other clinicians. And don't underestimate your power as a listener. You can make a difference too. So if you want more information about how you can make a difference and how you can serve, I would highly recommend that you get yourself into SA, Sex Anonymous, or SAA, Sex Addicts Anonymous, or COSA, which is for couples of sex addicts, or S-Anon, Celebrate Recovery, whatever the 12-step group is, because that 12-step is all about taking your life to the next level and making a difference. And when you go through the first 11 steps, you'll be ready for that 12-step. And just like my client today, we are all instruments for change. And so take a look at what you can do for yourself and for the lives of others. And as I tell you at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times, so I want you to fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. If you get bored, tune me in next week. Even though it's Memorial Day, we will, as I said earlier, have a repeat of a fascinating show. And then we'll have more guests and experts on in June. So I thank you for listening. I thank you for downloading. And I thank you for wanting to better yourself. This is Sex Help with Carol the Coach, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Make a difference. You can do it. Have a great week.